So you're doing that thing that I really love about artists that I really appreciate, and that's I get a chance to hear you play Bach or Mozart over the course of a career and get to reapproach them. That kind of was the focus when I was reading the liner notes of what you've been doing with the cello suites.
Absolutely. I mean, I felt like that within days or certainly years, a couple of years of that first recording. But in the last 2-3 years, with my interest in historically informed performance and using tools of the time, that's taken a sort of more urgent tone. So it felt right 15 years later to reapproach these pieces.
I think it's important for folks to understand that these are pieces, I don't know how much of the cello suites or how many or which parts, that you were studying when you were very, very young with the cello teacher who, didn't he say this is your Bible?
That was Gábor Rajtó. He was a Hungarian cellist who studied with Pablo Casals. And Bach was part of the daily diet. We played two movements of Bach every day. And you know, from the time I was 9 years old all the way through till about 17, 18 years old, that was part of how I grew up.
So if my math is correct, you were 29 at the first recording, is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right, 29, yeah, when I made it, you're right.
Bach is one of those composers that for the audience is all about discovery. But as a player of these pieces that are kind of an enigma in and of themselves, the idea of it being an epiphany throughout your life makes all the sense in the world. When you're 29, say, and you decided, I'm going to do this now, what was the impetus there? What made you think, okay, now I've got it?
Well, the impetus, you know, I had set them aside for like 10 years before that first recording, and I really was more involved in working with living composers and trying to get to the heart of the compositional process through that. And then I received an invitation. It was a big Bach year in 2000. And I received an invitation from a festival in Germany. So I began to reinvestigate them and tried to put away all the recordings that I had owned, you know, and aside and all the various interpretations, and tried to get over my sense of intimidation of how much I revere this music and how many other versions are out there. And I felt like I came to a very personal interpretation back then in 2000. But over the years, I've evolved even more and done more research on performance practice and period playing and setting up my own Gofriller cello with gut strings, aux gut strings, and using a Brogue bow and then looking very closely at the manuscript of Anna Magdalena. And all of that has informed even more what I do. And it's with Bach, it's always a matter of priorities and balancing priorities. You know, to what degree are these dance movements in the suites, and should you treat them like dances? To what degree is it a freer form, more improvisational? And finding that sense of balance. You know, to what degree is this music for the intellect? To what degree is it for the soul? Is it supposed to move people in a sense of affect? And so, yeah, just finding that right balance for yourself. You know, I feel like 15 years later, I have a very different set of priorities than I did 15 years ago.
I'm sure epiphany is not the right word, but with Bach, even for the audience, it's an awakening sometimes of listening. It's an awakening of how it fits in your life. When you're thinking about these, as you come to this second recording, was the sweet spot in thinking about it, or was the sweet spot when you started playing and found something musically that just made it all happen?
Both. I think there's a certain kinesthesia, a certain kind of physical process of playing this music. He was masterful in that way. There's a certain joy and a certain release of tension in drawing out a bass note in the right way on the cello. So the combination of how that feels and what that means for the narrative of the music, I think that's actually one of the epiphanies that I had a couple of years after making that first recording, was this idea that one, physically, you can, it's really a part of the piece. In fact, one of my teachers one of my composition teachers, theory teachers, Carl Schachter, he wrote on the fourth suite of Bach, and he likened symbolically the way the eighth notes are arranged on the page. He likened it to a cross. And so there's a sort of sense of crucifixion, you know, in that opening prelude of the fourth suite. And it kind of feels like a crucifixion because it's, you know, nothing's resonating. You don't have any open strings to help you out in E flat major. So it's a hard key to play on the cello. So I think it's no accident that Bach chose that key for, you know, that music. So there's that and you know, one thing led to another I realized that it's time for a new recording.
I don't want to overstate the importance of one part of Bach because I love it all, but it seems like the cello suites, even more than the violin partitas, take advantage of just what you're talking about, open strings, where the notes should be played on the instrument, which you're discovering again, and how they should really sound. When you talk about, are these dances, or is it like the suites, which are full of dances too? Artistically, when you've in your liner notes, you thank Anna Magdalena for her writing this down because the Bach score is gone. There's all sorts of ideas about why was this written. Now that you have this understanding of it, why do you think the cello suites even exist?
Oh, boy. All I know is that Bach was far ahead of his time, that it took a few centuries for Casals to discover it, you know, by accident in a store in Barcelona before we really realized what a treasure we have. But I think Bach was basically showing the way for that one single instrument could create a whole world of sound and keep, you know, the multiplicity of voices going at once simultaneously. I'm sure that he had to keep his cellist in the court busy, and this was one way to improve that cellist technique and give him something to do. It was also not completely out of thin air. I mean, 30 years before Bach wrote his cello suites, Domenico Gabrielli in Bologna, for example, wrote down his ricercare, these kind of improvisational forms, like preludes in a way. In fact, all the keys that Gabrielli used, Bach took exactly those same keys. With Gabrielli, there are seven of them, so there's an A minor as well, but all the other keys are the same between Gabrielli and Bach, and even some licks. I mean, Bach steals some ideas from this guy in Italy 30 years before him. So it doesn't come out of thin air. A lot of this was in the air, but Bach synthesizing this into this kind of encyclopedic almost collection is really so far ahead of his time, and really he set the standard for cello playing, really.
One of the coolest things about what you do is all that you do. I see that the next couple of days you're going to be playing on the Columbia campus, it looks like. You're going to be off to Montreal, but you're playing popular stuff. You're playing, you're taking the Bach cello suite sometimes to biker bars, you know, and you're playing in concert halls. How has this impacted your career that way, as you have this epiphany about Bach, which for a lot of us, it was music before Bach, but this is such a foundational composer. Has it changed your perspective in playing other things?
Of course. I mean, whenever you change the venue or you change the routine of what you're doing, it affects what you're playing. But really, Bach is Bach whether you play it in a biker bar or a Carnegie Hall. You know, it wasn't necessarily meant to be in either of those places. Maybe more in church and sort of more intimate spaces. But the music is so powerful, and for me, it's all part of the same trajectory. So I like to mix it up, and I with Christopher O'Reilly, we have a show called Shuffle Play Listen, and we'll go between Janacek and Stravinsky and Radiohead and Cocteau Twins and John McLaughlin. So we go back and forth, different genres. But Bach somehow transcends that all on its own. You know, I have friends in pop genres, jazz, that are deeply influenced by Bach. And in fact, there's a book by Eric Sibelin who you know, he wrote on the cello suites. He's a pop critic. He was a pop critic for the Montreal Gazette, and he just became obsessed with Bach's cello suites. So whether you're you know, you love classical music or other genres, I mean, these pieces somehow are incredibly universal, and so I never tire. I never tire of returning to them and sort of take. I guess I am obsessed in how you know, the evolution of the changing changing thoughts relationship with these pieces and what I personally hear and see in them as time goes on. It's a lifetime process.